Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Dodson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference, or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today I turn things over to Mayor Cam Guthrie for his annual State of the City address. It's become routine for me to post these speeches in full on the Guelph Politicast for the last few years. Why? Well, like throne speeches or State of the Unions, it's a good way to get an inside look at the political thinking of our leaders. What's important to them? What are their priorities? So when you listen to this year's State of the City, maybe keep those things in mind, and maybe keep in mind if the mayor might be on the right track, or why the mayor might be wrong. The State of the City is the topic of this edition of the Guelph Politicast. Since the speech and the accompanying Q&A is almost an hour long, I will keep my own opening comments brief. The State of the City was held at the Delta Hotel and Conference Center on February 4th. It's a ticketed event hosted by the Guelph Chamber of Commerce and is held at the end of January or beginning of February of every year. It's a chance for chamber members, leaders of the business community, to hear from the mayor of Guelph about his or her goals for the year and the political and economic standing of the city from the point of view of City Hall. This is the fifth time Mayor Cam Guthrie has delivered the address. This year's State of the City happened after Guthrie held his task force on homelessness and community safety, where Guthrie said it was his intent to use the State of the City as a call to action to get the business community involved in his initiatives to address poverty and need in Guelph. There was some of that in the speech, and there was the much-talked-about moment where Guthrie went off his prepared comments to talk about how he's failed as mayor on this issue, and you will hear that in this podcast. But along with getting action on homelessness, Guthrie touched on the forthcoming community plan, Guelph's status as a finalist in the Smart Cities Challenge, the Claire Maltby secondary plan, the upcoming budget, the transit service review, affordable housing, and many references to the NBC sitcom The Office. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we present unedited the State of the City for 2019.
But now, without further ado, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Mayor Cam Guthrie. Cam Guthrie was re-elected mayor of Guelph in 2018 after serving as mayor from 2014 to 2018 and councillor for Ward 4 from 2010 to 2014. Cam serves as the chair of the large urban Mayor's Caucus of Ontario. He was a licensed insurance broker and a local entrepreneur for 16 years, so he knows a thing or two about the business community. And this was all before he became mayor. He and his wife, Rachel, are the proud parents of two children. Please join me in welcoming our speaker this morning, Mayor Cam Guthrie.
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing? Good. Thank you to the 14 of you that answered me there. I appreciate it. Great. I love how Keithio, tried to introduce the chief and then the new chief coming in, right? And he said, I want to be on the good side of the chief. And then he messed up the name of the new chief. Oh, speed trap for you right now. that's great. Well, I really appreciate everyone being here, and this is my fifth State of the City address, and I'm just very humbled and very honored to be re-elected as the mayor for this fantastic city. So I appreciate all of you, whether you voted for me or not, you got me for the next 4 years. So I'm very grateful to be serving in this position, and I'm really thrilled to be working alongside my 12 colleagues of City Council, looking forward to moving our great city forward. I really want to thank the Chamber of Commerce and, of course, the sponsors, all of them, but especially the title sponsor, Bell. I think it was it over $7 million, something like that, I think I heard, that they might have raised. And so that is fantastic to go towards mental health issues across our country. I'd like to acknowledge members of council that are here today, and I'd like to ask them to stand, just to be recognized, and want to make sure I try to get everybody that I saw. So we have, she's already standing. Councillor, just stand, everyone. I won't even say your name. Just any random person, just stand. You are now a councillor for the City of Guelph. All right, we'll start then. Councillor Gawler, Councillor McKinnon, Downer, Piper, O'Rourke, and Gibson. And let's give them a round of applause. Some of them obviously can't be here today, and they're here in spirit, and I, for them not being here, it's a pleasure to work well alongside you as well. There's many staff that are here as well, and so I'm not going to go through them all, other than if I could please have anyone from the City of Guelph, especially our executive team, could you please stand and just be recognized for the excellent work that you do on behalf of our city and on behalf of council. I really appreciate us recognizing all of you. Well, I also want to thank and acknowledge our police chief, Jeff DeReuter, and alongside what Keith Eo said, and that is that, you know, he started with the Guelph Police back in 1984. I really want to thank him for his service to our community throughout all those years, especially his service as our chief. One of his major contributions has been his leadership in regards to the expansion of our police station downtown. And so thank you for your leadership. Where there you are. And it's been just a pleasure getting to know you. And you're a great friend of not just myself, but of this whole community. And this whole community wishes you nothing but the best alongside your family as you go into retirement. So let's give him an acknowledgement for everything he's done. And our chief designate, as I said, Gordon Colby, I jokingly said that our interview process went based on height. If you look at the two of them, they're exactly the same height. And so we're like, oh, you're in. So you switch your uniform there. So I'm very thrilled to have you on board. And we're looking forward as a community getting to know you as well. I'm thrilled about your position coming up. Now, as many of you know, for the state of the city, I always try my very best to present something to you that is memorable, something that will stay with you, something that you can talk to your colleagues and coworkers about when you leave here today, something that you can share on social media, so please make sure you feel free to do that. So last year I did the Monopoly board. Was anybody here for that? Yes? Okay. And this year, with bated breath, this year I decided to make my theme around the state of the city, around the TV show called The Office. You guys know that show? Okay, lots of heads nodding here. Many of you are probably very familiar with the show, but in case you don't know it, here's a quick summary. The Office aired for 9 years, from 2005 to 2013. It follows a group of office workers at a fictional paper company called... Thank you very much, everyone. And their clueless but lovable boss, Michael Scott. The employees spend their days in the office selling copier paper, taking part in Michael's ridiculous team building and training exercises, and playing pranks on each other. The show is a satire of modern office culture, but more than that, it is about relationships. It's about how this group of characters who are thrown together in this office setting to form meaningful connections with each other. Now, over the course of the show, the characters come to love one another. They work together to keep Dunder Mifflin afloat through all the changes and all the challenges. As the audience, we've come to love and relate with all of these characters too, despite the fact that they're not perfect and, of course, they make mistakes. So here is the opening credits of the show featuring all of the characters. Okay, so we're all familiar, right? We're all, yes, lots of heads nodding, that's good. Well, because it's a new term of council, I thought we needed our own video. So here it is. To make, and I can hardly wait for all the jokes comparing me to Michael Scott, thank you very much. Or perhaps due to my love of karate and trying to protect everyone from bears, perhaps I'm Dwight from The Office. Maybe that's what I am. Look, I really wanted to make this version, the Guelph version of The Office, as a fun way to introduce this council, but I'm also trying to get across a very serious message to you and our city, and that's a message about teamwork. I've often said that during an election campaign, it's all about me. But after the election, it is all about we. This is true for every member of council. We ran in the election campaign as 13 individuals with 13 maybe different ideas, but 13 different names on signs, different perspectives that we gave to the voters. But now as a council, we have become one team. And as a team, we must be committed to listening to each other, learning from each other, and harnessing our best ideas together. That's not to say we're always going to agree on every issue. We're not. The beauty of our local democracy is that questions, respectful debates, and compromises that happen in council chambers truly make our city better. With only a handful of meetings under our belt so far this term, I can tell you that that's already happening. We can disagree. We can still also remain friends afterwards. We can disagree and still move forward in the best interests of our city. And just like The Office, Jim drives Dwight crazy, but Dwight always has Jim's back when it really matters. So when we talk about our city, our team also includes city staff. Council is very fortunate to be supported by excellent city staff, a professional team. They are from the executive team all the way to our frontline workers. And this also includes our community, residents, businesses, organizations, volunteers, neighbors, community partners. They all play a vital role in everything that we do. So in this year's State of the City, I wanted to highlight our team and how we're working together to make Guelph an even better place to live. Now, it will come to no surprise to anyone in this room that municipalities have definitely changed dramatically over the last 40 years. Municipalities have always been providers of services. We build roads, pick up the garbage, we offer swimming lessons as an example. The role has always been fundamental to ensuring safe, healthy, and a well-functioning city. And it still is today. But today, in addition to being service providers, municipalities must also be problem solvers. We must be innovators. We need to capitalize on opportunities in order to keep our city on the map, globally, especially in a competitive world. We need to find new ways of solving old challenges. We need to tackle increasingly complex issues like food security or homelessness or social change. And we need to do it by looking beyond the walls of City Hall and engaging with a broad range of different players, other levels of government, businesses, entrepreneurs, non-for-profit organizations, and the residents. And there's that theme again of relationship building. One of the key ways we're going to do this is through the creation of what's called the community plan. A plan which has, well, it's going to have huge, wide-ranging goals for the whole city for over the next 10 years. I concluded last year at my State of the City by launching the engagement of the community plan. We had staff actually at a table in the lobby afterwards collecting feedback from people who attended the breakfast. Now, 1 year later now, that engagement has wrapped up, and I can honestly say it was beyond anything that our city has experienced before. It included more than 100 engagement activities at community festivals, events, workshops, and meetings, more than 5,000 engaged in person, more than 4,000 people visited the website and the engagement platform there, more than 103 community events and meetings were facilitated by staff and different community members, and in-depth workshops were held with the economic, social, and health environment, arts, and culture sectors of our community. Staff are now putting all of that feedback together and drafting the community plan, which council will receive this spring. Once endorsed, the plan will be used as a basis to develop council's shared agenda for this term. It will also be used by the executive team to renew its city corporate administration plan, and it will inform all the work plans and our budgets. In short, the community plan will be foundational to much of the city's work over the next decade. The final plan will include a community vision, values, areas of focus, and goals, and it will spell out how we're going to track and report on that progress. I want to really thank again city staff who have led this project over the last year, as well as the organizations and the community members who have participated in the process. I am very much looking to see the plan coming together this spring. Now, if there's one project that demonstrates the new role of municipalities and the way that we are rising to these complex issues, it is the Smart Cities Challenge. Through the Smart Cities Challenge, the federal government challenged communities to address a complex social program through technology and data. A little over 9 months ago, the City of Guelph and the County of Wellington submitted an application. We are proposing that Guelph and Wellington will become Canada's first technology-enabled circular food economy. We aim to increase access to affordable, nutritious food by 50%, create 50 new circular businesses and collaborations, and increase circular economic revenues by 50% by recognizing the value of waste, all by the year 2025. We envision a food system where everyone can access nutritious food. Nothing is wasted. The impact on our environment is minimal, and food experts and entrepreneurs come together to tackle our most complex food issues. The Smart Cities Prize is $10 million. In case you haven't heard, we are one of the finalists, and our final proposal is due on March the 5th. We have generated a great amount of buzz around this proposal, and everything that I've heard already suggests that we are very strong contenders for the win. Of course, I'm expecting that we will win. Where's Lloyd again? Come on, Lloyd. Help us out, buddy. But the partnerships, like even if we don't win, the partnerships that we've created already and the relationships that we've already built are going to make this whole thing the last 10 months worthwhile anyways. Now, Guelph and Wellington have always been leaders nationally and internationally in food and in agriculture. We have some of the best brains in the world when it comes to food, from the research and innovation at the University of Guelph to the rich agricultural heritage of Wellington County, to the more than 1,600 food businesses and entrepreneurs that call Guelph and Wellington home, to organizations like The Seed that are tackling food security. We have always had those strengths. There's nothing new. But I think this is the first time you'll find them all in the same room together. This is some of the best brains in the world collaborating together to pursue a better and more innovative and more effective and more equitable and more sustainable way of providing one of our most basic needs, food. The very fact that we're submitting this application jointly between the city and the county, and that our vision brings rural and urban together, sets us apart in this challenge. We have also made connections internationally. We were selected to collaborate with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, which is a UK-based charity that aims to accelerate the transition to circular economies. And the foundation studies circular economies in all sectors of life, but they chose Guelph and Wellington to be part of the Cities and Food Initiative. This is huge. If I compare it to The Office, this is like the Scranton branch merging with the Stamford branch, and they become the top-selling Dunder Mifflin branch of all time. Now, one of the most frequent issues that come up during our community plan consultations, and for me personally, when I was walking door-to-door through the election, and I heard it from many of the candidates and many of the successful councillors that are here, was housing affordability. We have a housing problem in this city, and it affects people across all income levels and along the housing continuum that you can see on the screen here. Guelph struggles with both the price of housing and the availability of different types of housing. At the home ownership end of the spectrum, we know that growing families are holding on to their starter homes because they can't find or can't afford something else to meet their needs. And I hear many, many stories from people who are currently renting, and they cannot crack into the housing market to buy that first home. Prices are too high, stock is too low. As we move along the spectrum, there's also issues with affordability and availability of the rental market. Our vacancy rate is one of the lowest in the province at 1.4%, and 3% is considered to be healthy. 41% of tenant households in Guelph are spending 30% or more of their household income on shelter costs. This is a complex issue, and there is no magic wand. But we have a supply and demand issue in our city. There is simply not enough supply for all the people who want to live here. Yet one of the major projects that will ease the supply issue is the development of the Clare Maltby area. This is the last unplanned greenfield area in Guelph, and the Clare Maltby secondary plan is the policy document that will determine how it's developed. It's located in Ward 6 on the southern boundary of our city, and I know Councillors McKinnon and O'Rourke are taking a keen interest in this process. City staff are doing an incredible job on this secondary plan work. This slide shows all the work that has been done and is ongoing. I won't read it all, but you get an idea. It's very significant, the amount of work that's happening here. Now, Clare Maltby is located on the Paris Moraine, which is an important groundwater recharge for our city and for the surrounding area. And that's why we are doing a comprehensive environmental impact study, which includes detailed groundwater studies. This is just one of several technical studies that are supporting informed, science-based decisions around land use planning. Now, around the Council Horseshoe, there are many long-standing advocates for the protection of water resources, including someone like Councillor Gordon. But we all take this very seriously. In fact, the protection of our natural heritage, someone like Councillor Piper, has been something that's been key to her over her many years being on council. But again, that's something that all of us on council want to make sure we're protecting. We're not going by gut or instinct here on this one. We are letting the experts do what they do best. Provide recommendations that are grounded in science, technical studies, and data. There will be a public open house actually in April of this year, followed by a statutory public meeting in May, and Council's decision meeting is expected to place later in the fall on these lands. Now, another project that would improve housing supply, this time at the affordable and at the rental end of the spectrum, is the redevelopment of the former Imico property, or 200 Beverly Street. It's a 13-acre site close to the downtown and the Aramosa River. Now, Councillors Bell and Councillors Gibson have been strong advocates for this project on behalf of their constituents in Ward 1. For 77 years, this property was home to the foundry called the International Malleable Iron Company, or Imico, as many people in Guelph will call it. As a result, the soil and groundwater beneath the site needs to be remediated. This is the story with many cities as old as Guelph. Some of our best real estate is brownfield land because of the previous industrial sites that we're on. Now, the city has signed a memorandum of understanding with the Habitat for Humanity and an urban developer with the goal of working cooperatively to develop the site with affordable housing in mind. The development would include market-priced units, including condos and rental units, Habitat for Humanity and creating home ownership units, and affordable rental and supportive housing units. It could also include new commercial businesses and community amenities like parks or even a small community center. We know the potential is there to create something amazing on this site. Think of all the other examples of successful brownfield redevelopments in our city, from the Metalworks downtown to the Commercial Plaza at Wellington and Gordon. 200 Beverly Street can be just as great. Now, we are advocating with upper levels of government for funding support for environmental remediation on the property, and I am very grateful, and this community should be very grateful, for the support that we are getting from our MP, Lloyd Longfield, and from our MPP, Mike Schreiner. We seriously, give them a round of applause, because they are doing a very good job advocating for us. And so we keep going, please. Why are you here? Go talk to somebody. Yes, somebody. Yeah, no, that's we really do appreciate it. Now, this project would not only offer much of the affordable housing, but it would fix long-standing environmental problems and concerns as well. It would revitalize this old Guelph neighborhood and drive a huge amount of economic development as well. As Michael Scott would say, it's a win-win-win. Now, let's continue with the housing continuum. At the far left end of the housing spectrum, we know that homelessness is a serious and growing issue in our community. Councillors Gawler and Gordon have both talked about this as a crisis that is leaving too many people behind. It's unacceptable. In a caring and proper city like Guelph, to have people sleeping in tents or on the streets is unacceptable. And that's why I convened a Mayor's Task Force on Homelessness and Community Safety. Now, the task force included all levels of government, the Guelph-Wellington Task Force on Poverty Elimination, the Wellington-Guelph Drug Strategy, frontline agencies and shelters, and organizations like Public Health, Police, EMS, the Hospital, and the Lynn, and more. And I want to thank Councillor Downer, who is the council representative on that task force. And I also want to thank Councillor Hoffland, who participated in our last meeting and has been working on these issues for many years as one of the founding members of the Poverty Task Force. The task force has met twice. We determined a priority list to take action on homelessness in the short and the medium term. Now, the list is built with two fundamental understandings. Number one, the issue of homelessness, substance use, and mental health are all related. And we know that the majority of people in Guelph who are homeless are also experiencing issues with mental health and substance use. This is not just about finding them a bed for the night. Number two, thanks to the work of the County of Wellington, Poverty Task Force, and other agencies, we have a good understanding of how many people in Guelph are actually homeless and actually who they are. We have what's called a by-name list. This is about real people, real members of our community. We also have a good understanding of what the solutions are. In some cases, there are programs that were working, but then the funding ran out. So here is a list of the task force priorities, and these are in no particular order. The first one is permanent supportive housing to house 15 chronically homeless individuals with complex needs from that by-name list. The second, we need to reopen the supportive recovery room. It was a minimum of 5 beds that are required for people experiencing addiction or mental health crisis who are too sick to be in a shelter, but not sick enough to be in the hospital. It would be staffed by a registered nurse, an addictions counselor, and a peer worker, and would meet sleep in the recovery needs for those clients for up to 72 hours. The third is we need to fund the Welcoming Streets Initiative, which is an outreach worker who supports individuals and businesses in the downtown, connecting individuals to service and supports, and helping to educate and empower downtown businesses. The funding for that pilot project that has worked so well for our community actually runs out on March the 31st. Number four, restart an addiction court support worker program. Now, this was in place in 2017 until, you guessed it, the funding ran out. This is a counselor who connects people to addiction services and supports at a time of very high motivation when they're in bail court. The pilot project showed great results, including connections to treatment and services, many for the first time. And there was then fewer contacts with our police. And the fifth and last one was service and system improvements, which includes improvements or expansions to services that already exist in our community. This could include expanding the hours on evenings or weekends or holidays because the needs are 24/7, not 9-5. If we could include things like peer supports or making sure homeless people and substance users are part of designing our services, they'll also be better. Now, in some cases, these projects need partnerships or policy change, but in many of them, the barrier is straight up funding. Now, I will be hosting a follow-up meeting with funding partners with the Lynn, the County, the United Way, and others to try to find out how we can fund these. But I'm having to put some of these funding requests at the feet of Council on March the 5th. Some of the funding that used to come from the upper levels of government. You know what? I'm going to go off script here for a second. I have failed as a mayor, as a leader the last 4 years in regards to this issue. This is an issue that has to be solved. We cannot be a community if we're leaving people behind. We cannot do it. And it no longer can I say, well, it's their problem. It's the provincial government's problem. Or it's the federal government's problem. And a year goes by, and another year goes by, and another year goes by, and the same people aren't getting help. There have been people that are dying in our city. We must step up. And I will not fail as the leader of this city over the next 4 years. These are my goals. And no longer am I going to use the crutch or the excuse that it's someone else's problem. It's our problem, and I'm not going to take it anymore, to be honest. Got a little carried away there, I'm sorry. You know, I look at this room, and I put out a respectful call to the people in this room. It's a community crisis. It takes a community response. If there's anything your business or your organization can do to help to the things I just outlined, please let me know. Please let me know. I'd really like to talk with you. We're not going to get a magic bag of money from the province to deal with this. I know it. We're going to have to do this together. We're going to have to find partnerships. And if we each give a little, we can get this done. I really want to thank all the members of the task force for their insights and their incredible dedication. Homelessness can seem like an overwhelming problem, but at the task force meetings, I was very inspired with the optimism in the room. We can end homelessness in Guelph, and with your support, we will. Now, moving to the budget. The city has made tremendous strides over the past few years in ensuring we achieve maximum value for the tax dollars that we spend. Your money, we always remember that, it's your money. You earned it, what we spent. That was also off script. Just want to let you know that I get it. Now, under a council-approved service review framework that was started last term, the city has a system to examine the relevance, the effectiveness, and the efficiency of city services. This ensures we are allocating resources to achieve the best outcomes for our city. I know Councillor Billings is a strong advocate for service reviews, but again, so is all members of council. Service reviews look at questions like, what do our services provide? Are they core to city business? What value are they offering? Are there better ways to deliver service? And that kind of reminds me of this table here, or most of the people here are from Electra. We did, in a way, a very fulsome service review last year in regards to our asset Guelph Hydro, and council made the decision to merge with Electra, which has been excellent to date, and we appreciate you being here. I didn't know you were going to be here today, so thank you very much. Could you make my hydro a little bit lower, though, while I got you? The city has made, as I said, tremendous strides on these service reviews. Now, council has received 3 service reviews so far. One was on boulevard maintenance, one was on solid waste, and the other one was on transit. The solid waste review helped us resolve a bad contract that was causing our recycling operation to have a loss. We were able to get out of that contract and right the ship at the recycling facility. And the recent transit review gave a dozen recommendations to improve reliability and support the growth of our transit system. I know people like Councillors Ault, Hoffman, and Councillor Salisbury, long-standing advocates for transit. But what I'm pleased about this term already is I'm hearing 13 strong voices on council for implementing transit recommendations. My goal is to review as many city services as possible. Service reviews are now ingrained in our organization. They are just a part of doing business. Now, next year, we're actually going to be reviewing council's composition, our employment status, ward boundaries, and so on. This isn't really a service review, but it will look at the most effective composition for council in order to best serve our city. Now, the first phase will look at council composition, including the method of councillor election, whether by ward, we continue by ward, or maybe we change it to being at large, or maybe a combination of both. the total number of counselors, whether they should be full-time or part-time or a combination of both. The second phase will be then a ward boundary, and the third phase will consider salary and staff and resources for members of council. And I know there'll be a lot of interest in this review, and it will be conducted by a third party, and it will have extensive public engagement component. Now, last week, council approved the 2019 capital budget and then received the 2020-2028 capital forecast. This is a comprehensive, fully funded, sustainable, and long-term capital plan for our city. 67% of the 2019 capital budget supports infrastructure renewal, the maintenance, repair, and replacement of existing infrastructure. Now, the capital forecast proposes that the South End Community Center start in 2020. And again, I know our Ward 6 councilors are very excited about that. This long-awaited center will include a twin pad arena, pool, gym, walking track, and community rooms. The forecast also suggests the new main library on Baker Street in 2021. This will be a major redevelopment project with commercial, residential, and community institutional space in addition to the much-needed new library and an underground parking garage. This project will take a surface parking lot and turn it into a major engine for economic growth, jobs, community building, and downtown vitality. I want to really thank the library board, who did an excellent job with their business case for the new library, and that was key, that business case, to council's approval last year. I also want to acknowledge Councillor Gordon, who serves on the library board. It's a little known fact that councillors serve on a number of the local boards and committees in our community. It's an important but often overlooked part of their role as members of council. Now tonight, council will hear staff present on the city's operating budget. And our decision meeting will, as I said, have already take place on March the 5th. For those of you who would like to watch the meetings from the comfort of your own home, they are now available and live streamed at guelph.ca/council. Now, one of the primary financial goals of this term has been what's called multi-year budgeting. By creating multi-year budgets, we can align long-term goals with long-term funding. We will provide greater certainty to taxpayers about what to expect. We will improve accountability and transparency, and we will achieve significant administrative efficiencies. Subject to council's approval of the multi-year budgeting policies later this year, in January 2020, staff will now deliver a four-year operating and capital budget for the years 2020 through to the end of 2023. Now, one of the things that I think, if I get back to the homelessness issue, I saw this, and I want to give credit to the person I found it online that said it. The name I wrote down here was Brent Todarian. I want to make sure I'm saying that right. But he said something that really stuck with me and I wanted to share with you. The truth about a city's aspirations isn't found in its vision, it's found in its budget. And so when it comes to budget time this year, I have a challenge for our council and for our community to really find out what our aspirations are by looking at what we're actually doing in the budget. Now, I believe there are opportunities for our city to become faster, more efficient, more customer service focused, and especially on how we deliver services. And I'm very encouraged over the last several years, the success of the Building Partnerships Initiative, which has made it easier to do business with City Hall. It's improved timelines for developments and businesses. And this is because of a dedicated team members within City Hall in each department that were empowered to make changes to the way we have done things. If we can apply those lessons around that, I believe we can make those same different, we can apply those same learned lessons across the entirety of the department. One of the things I've been talking to staff about in an encouraging way is that we did a really great job with, as I said, making things work for the business community, permitting quicker, customer service, developments. At the same time now that that's somewhat taken care of, but we will continually learn there, we need to think non-business, and we have to make sure that we're doing it for everyone. That means someone that just wants to shut their road down for a neighborhood party. Let's make that process really great for those people too. It doesn't have to be about huge major developments and the business community. It has to be the spectrum of everyone to make it easy to do business with City Hall. Now, as I said at the beginning, the role of cities has grown and become more complex over the last few years. We're not only building the roads, picking up the garbage, or giving the swimming lessons. We're tackling food security, we're tackling homelessness, forging innovative partnerships and finding new ways of doing things in order to maximize efficiencies and bring value. And this brings me full circle back to the office. Now, one of the things central to the office is called the Dundee Awards. Okay? Of course, the employees are selling a product, copy or paper, that's becoming obsolete. In the age of the paperless office, ordering online, the big box stores, who needs Dunder Mifflin or who needs the salesmen like Dwight? The very first episode centered around the potential closure of the Scranton branch because corporate can't afford to support branches in both Scranton and Stamford. But over the course of the show, there is a merger with Stamford, there is a buyout, there is a bankruptcy, and then there's another buyout. And through all this uncertainty, the employees in the office must be willing to adapt, to evolve, but also stick together as a team. And that is exactly what we are doing at the City of Guelph. Council and administration are forging new paths together with the city employees. Other levels of government are coming along. Institutions like the University of Guelph, Conestoga College, we have Innovation Guelph in the room, the Guelph Business Enterprise Center, non-for-profits, business leaders, and residents. We are a team, and that includes everyone in this room this morning. Relationship building is one of Guelph's great strengths. I see it absolutely every day. It truly inspires me to see people coming together, especially like things for the community plan, the Smart Cities Challenge, the Task Force on Homelessness, the Baker Street Redevelopment, Building Partnerships Initiative in City Hall, and the list goes on. So Michael Scott famously gave out the Dundee Awards to his employees at an annual ceremony, including the Whitest Sneaker Award, the Longest Engagement Award, the Hottest in the Office Award. I gave that one to myself for 5 years running, just so everyone knows. If I were giving out the Dundee's Awards, though, today, I'd give one to the Chamber. I'd give one to the University. I'd give one to those involved with the Poverty Task Force. I'd give one to Electra for helping us with our hydro. I could go around the room. I'd give one to almost every single person. I better not say it almost. Every single person in this room would get a Dundee Award. All of you deserve one for the innovative work that you do each and every day. So my challenge to you this morning is let's keep this momentum going. Let's keep talking, listening, and learning from each other. When we work together, when we stick together, there's absolutely nothing that we can't accomplish. And I'm very thankful that I was able to be with you here this morning. Thank you very, very much. Perfect. So I purposely did a little bit of a shorter speech this year because some people over the last few years have said, oh, I wish I could ask a question about this or that. And so I'd like to open it up for questions. This is always the fun part, right? You never know what you're going to get. I'll take a deep breath. No, it's all good. So does anyone have any questions at all about anything that's happening in the city, anything I talked about in the speech today? I'm here for you right now. But maybe only for 10 seconds. You got like 10 seconds to put up your hand. No questions? There's no questions about anything happening in the city. Wow, this is great. Just see my inbox. Okay. If there's, okay, two of you at the same time. As soon as I'm about to. Okay, we'll go ladies first. Go ahead. Yep.
Sorry, I'm actually very interested in the neighborhood initiatives that you're taking, like 12 neighborhood sports coalition.
Mm-hmm. Sure, so the question was about the Guelph Neighborhood Support Coalition. So we have several, it's about 16, am I right? 16? Good, got the number right. We have about 16 of those neighborhood groups that we would call them. They are actually set up under the city as what's called a CBA, which is a community benefit agreement. So it's like a contract. So it is funded, fully funded within the budget. In fact, last year, council gave an extra $100,000 towards that initiative so they could hire some more people to help with what they do across the city. And so, they're invaluable. In fact, many of the initiatives that they take in all these neighborhood groups, they actually do help a lot with some of the risks of those in poverty, those are struggling with food insecurity, helping people get matched up with health care. They do really great work. They also have a lot of fun as well. They do really good community barbecues and garage sales. I love those. I love the garage sales. Those are really good. So yeah, they're invaluable. And so that's how it's worked through the city, through the community benefit agreement. Yeah, there's several CBAs, community benefit agreements. One of them, as I said, is with them. It's already embedded into the budget. So, of course, everything's always dependent upon council approval. But as far as I'm concerned, it's gonna continue. Yeah. Now I saw another hand go up here as well. Yes.
You mentioned a possibility of changing the way the council is elected or set up. Mm-hmm.
No, we really don't. You can think of, okay, well, if you start kind of thinking it through, where's all the growth of the city happening? Well, it's mostly, Clare to Maltby from a Greenfield perspective. But the downtown is kind of becoming, I feel, its own place. We're going to have about 10,000 people living in the downtown core by 2041. Like, that's a lot of people just in that area there. So it's the distribution of population, the population targets that the province is wanting us to try to meet as well. So we have to look out further. So there is, and so that begs the questions that I talked about in the speech, right? Well, if we're going to have all these different, if we're going to have all this population, do we need as many counselors? Do we need more? Do we need less? Should be the part-time? Should be the full-time? And less counselors? And should we elect people by ward still, or should we elect people at large across the whole city? And of course, there's different opinions on all of that. But the reason why it's all cities who do these reviews, they always have a third party consultant do it for the reasons that you don't want any conflict of interest or trying to have counselors run it. Because at the end of the day, they're going to have to vote on what they feel is best for the community for the future. Elections, right? Yeah, good question.
Thank
you. Yes, Lloyd.
We've got many conversations going on, and one of them with Electra, looking at climate change initiatives that we're doing in the city. You've mentioned some cost cutting from the province. There's some pressure from there. Could you comment on maybe your relationship with FCM and the role that municipalities are playing, particularly with things like infrastructure funding, climate change?
Sure. So FCM stands for the Federation of Canadian Municipalities. So it's an organization across Canada that all the municipalities are, most of them are all partnering with. And so their role is all the municipalities basically fund FCM so that FCM can be a really good conduit, especially to the federal government, so that we can get commonalities between cities, the common issues, front and center to the ministers, to the prime minister. And so when it comes to infrastructure, specifically around climate change, we have been actually successful, Guelph and many municipalities have been successful through different funding mechanisms because of FCM's lobbying efforts through to the federal government. And I can't remember what we've got here. Does anyone remember, maybe a staff member? Does anyone remember what we got here from FCM? We got some from the Green Fund, I think it was. Am I right? Yes. We got some money through what's called the Green Fund through FCM. I know that the federal government, you also helped secure for us, I think it was upwards to almost $200,000 towards updating our community energy initiative. And so that helped a lot with what we wanted to do here in our community when it comes to, because energy is a huge issue. It dovetails into climate change so much, right? We've done a lot on climate change. Sometimes when I do these speeches, I go, later I'm looking through social media, and people are always, great speech, great speech, great speech, great speech. He's so handsome. Great speech, great speech. And then I say, I see one comment that's like, he didn't talk about this. Why didn't he talk about it? Like, my speech would be 18 hours long if I told you about every single thing that the city of Guelph is doing. But quickly on climate change. So I'm so proud that we said that we want to be a net zero community by 2050. And so that's a really good goal to be striving for. Speaking of striving, we want to also try on the corporate side, so on the city corporate side, we want to try to be 100% renewable energy by 2050. We introduced the stormwater fee a couple of years ago that has greatly helped with reducing risk in regards to stormwater management within the city of Guelph. And we set up a couple years ago a climate change and sustainability office. So we're changing LED lights, street lights across the whole city. So there, boom, boom. You know, I'm talking about all those things right there. Those are all things that we're actually actioning in regards to climate change. Okay, you got 5 seconds. If not, I'm calling. Yes, sir. Yes.
Came in under the wire.
Yeah.
With the imminent development of the Clare Malpe lands and, of course, the burgeoning population in the South End, I'm just wondering if there's any update on any initiatives to deal with the rapid transit. Because it's no big secret, a lot of people that live in the South End have to access the 401, so it's basically getting quite packed. So I'm just wondering if there's anything on the horizon that that might help address for that type of transit.
Sure. So I'll talk about transit both kind of internally, so internal to Guelph's boundaries, and then regional, or what I would call transit outside of the boundary, right? So from an internal perspective, I just mentioned in my speech, we just received, I think, 12 recommendations on our service review when it came to transit, which we approved, and now that will help fund next steps through the budget and whatnot, not just this budget, but continuous budgets in regards to helping internally. Now, there has been some people have talked about, well, why doesn't Guelph have an LRT? You know, like what Kitchener or Waterloo is trying to get. But that's actually been looked at here in Guelph, and we just don't have the population base, nor the projected population base to support something like that. But there could be in the future some talk of what's called a BRT, which is a bus rapid transit. And in a way, we implemented that about a year and a half ago. It's called the 99. And it's a spine route that runs all the way from Clare and Gordon, all the way down Norfolk to Woolwich, all the way to the Walmart at Woodlawn. And that is running up and down every 10, 15 minutes, all up and down the spine. And that has been a game changer for our city when it's coming to transit. And we need to do more things like that. So that's internal. External, regional, right now, Mike's laughing. Everything's on hold right now with the province. They're reviewing everything. Fair enough, right? Fair enough. I was in that position. I was new when I came in here. You want to review everything and get everything. I get it, okay? So that's fair. But I think when it comes to GO trains is the biggest issue. And we need all day two-way GO. And, you know, it's been promised for like 15 years under different successive provincial governments. And so we'll see it when the ribbon cutting actually happens. But until then, I don't know. We keep hearing promises, but I don't know. And then further to that, you'll probably remember a couple years ago, I announced about high-speed rail. Now, I know about these numbers very clearly because I was so excited about it. You were projected able to get from Guelph to the Pearson Airport in 23 minutes. And you were able to get from Guelph to downtown Toronto in 39 minutes. And that was, we were on track, no pun intended, through the Liberal government. They were wanting to have that in up and running by about 2025, 2026. That was their hope. We have the new government now, and now it's under review. Fair enough, but I can tell you from a regional perspective, Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, Guelph, we are quite concerned about not only two-way all-day GO that's required as the first step, but also future of high-speed rail as well. Our region needs to have those transportation options. Okay, thank you very, yes. I'm just going to keep saying thank you very much, and then someone's going to clap their hand.
So just to piggyback on that comment, the other issue that I think a lot of businesses have is the labor issue for hiring, whether it's skilled or unskilled.
Yep.
Can you just kind of give some insight on what you're working on or what what your thoughts are on that?
Sure. So when it comes to, back up for a second. Our Economic Development Department is actually just starting now, just launching an update on a strategic plan in regards to everything around our economic development within the city of Guelph. But it's no surprise to anybody that it probably is going to land around agri-food sector, especially because of the University of Guelph, and green jobs, clean tech. That is the future. And Guelph already has put a stake in the ground in regards to that. We're attracting businesses that are in that realm anyways. But when it comes to the skilled labor and labor shortages, that is all too real. Like you, I know of businesses in Guelph that are actually spending money in like out west at trade shows to try to attract people to come to Guelph and work. I mean, we all drive around, especially I live in the west end of Guelph, so I drive around, you know, all the Linamar plants and stuff like that. There are mobile, big mobile signs that go hiring. I mean, you go down, we all see those signs all over the place. So the issue is that there's so many jobs available, there's just not enough people. We have the lowest unemployment in Canada, and everyone goes, yay, but it's a double-edged sword, because it's a shortage of people, the skilled labor that's required as well. So as much as it's great that we're doing really great and everyone has a job, it can be the other side of it as well. So I know that our Economic Development Department is going to be leading and will be engaging with especially many of the community in this room about that strategic plan moving forward to update Prosperity 2020, I believe it was called, in regards to. You're going to be leading that, aren't you?
Well, I have a team.
Yes. Okay, I'm really going this time. Okay, so thank you very much, everyone.
And once again, that was Mayor Cam Guthrie delivering the State of the City Address on Thursday, February 4th at the Delta Hotel and Conference Center. For full coverage of the speech, a video, and coverage of Mayor Guthrie and City Council in the last few weeks since the speech, you can go to guelphpolitico.ca. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. Check out the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico, and you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.